Thanks very much, Shane. Thank you.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? Thanks very much to Catherine for sitting in yesterday. If you want to contact the programme, as always, 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We're busying ourselves for tomorrow's show. Every show is important, but tomorrow's show is particularly important. Did I ever tell you that? I had to read the reading at the confirmation. I don't know why they chose me. And that was the word that I stumbled over every time, particularly. So I had to break it down into syllables, particularly. Anyway, yes, we're working hard on tomorrow's show because it is the day we launch our book, A Page from My Life. And we've got together recordings of some of the contributors reading their 500 word pieces. We've planned interviews with people, particularly with those people who we were curious as to what happens next, because a number of the 500 word contributions leave you hanging and you want to know, whoa, what happened? Did they fall in love? Are they married? Did she leave? Did he leave? Did they find the thing? So we're going to have a number of those. Of course, we'll have our judges on again, Donal Ryan, Owen Colfer, Emily Pine and Emer MacLeisert. And we've asked our contributors from all over the country to send us voice notes and videos. So we'll be playing clips of those as well. So it's a big day for us. And it's a big day for you as well, because you'll be able to get your hands on the book. And I know it's not as we all would like. We won't be able to saunter down to our favourite bookshop and go in and say, have you got that book? Your man on the radio has been talking about it forever. Just give it to me. Sell it to me now so he'd stop talking about it. Because bookshops are closed. So it'll have to be click and collect. But make sure you help out your local bookshop. We'll need them the other side of this lockdown, this pandemic. So A Page My Life is what you're looking for. It'll cost you $14.99. And the sales of the book will benefit Laura Lynn, which is a children's hospice. Two words that should never appear together, but they do. And that's the reality of life. And we have Jane McKenna on today just to remind us of the great work that Laura Lynn do and about the story of her two daughters, Laura and Lynn, and why herself and Brendan set up Laura Lynn nearly 10 years ago now. It's hard to believe. They'll be celebrating their 10th anniversary next year. Anyway, we're going to be talking to Jane about that. So that's tomorrow's show, the whole show. It's a big launch, just me and my own here, but we'll have people from all over the country contributing. We had a big plan, you know. We booked Studio One, which is where the RT Concert Orchestra play, and there's a big area, floor area, and then there's bleachers and there's the gods, and we could have got loads of people in there, all 150 contributors, and we would, you know, I had this notion of, you know, the champagne, the clinking of glasses, the cheese on a stick. Me with a roaming microphone going around having the crack, everybody contributing, and this joyous occasion. Of course, like a lot of joyous occasions that were planned, they've been cancelled due to level 5. But we'll do our best. We'll do our best tomorrow from 3 to 4:30. Also today, a man that I've met over the last while, and he's an impressive character, Endo Doherty. And he has a book out, I'm Fine, Thoughts on Life, Addiction, Love and Health. And he's the man who went around the place with a fridge on his back. He went from Belfast down to Waterford, where he teaches in the De La Salle College down there. And he also climbed Kilimanjaro with a fridge on his back. Not a fridge, that's somebody else, a washing machine. So we'll be talking to him about that and his alcoholism and his love and the love of his life, Maeve, and loads of things. So he's an interesting, looking forward to that chat. He's gone into our Waterford studio, because he lives less than 5 kilometres away from the Waterford studio. So it's Halloween week and it's midterm break, and how do you entertain the children? Because you can't go to the local shopping centre. You can't do all the things you usually do. Pumpkin carving. We had Mark on and Michael on Friday. Michael was the man who grows giant pumpkins, the largest pumpkin in Ireland. I think he still has the record. And Mark is the man who carves pumpkins and does it brilliantly. And unknowns to me, they asked him to do a carving of me, my likeness. And so I brought it home. Who else would want it, right? I brought it home. Thought it'd be there just as a show it to the children, entertain them for a couple of minutes. And then Jenny insisted on putting it out, outside the house, yes, on the step, in front of the front door. And there it is. And I said, do you really want to do that? Do you really? Why would you do that? Please don't do that. But it's there. Alongside it is one that I carve. And I was saying to Mark the other day that whenever I carve a pumpkin, I don't know if you have the same problem, that it always ends up looking happy and not scary. And the, you know, the object of the exercise is to make the pumpkin look scary. It's Halloween after all. But I managed to achieve scariness this time. So I've took a picture of it yesterday evening, or maybe the evening before, and I've given it to Niamh, and he's going to put it up on Twitter so you can decide yourself. I don't know how I achieved scary this time. I think it's the eyes. So I got a template from the internet, and it had eyes there. The eyes were supposed to be part of the pumpkin, but I cut too much off, so the eyes were gone. So then I had to think, how would you make eyes? So I put two half figs on sticks and stuck it into the pumpkin, and there are the eyes, and it makes it look very scary. So if you're carving a pumpkin, you want eyes, half figs if you have them around the house, and half a cocktail stick each. You want to be careful saying that. Half a cocktail stick each. So it's success, anyway. And the other thing is, I suppose people are watching more telly now than ever before. I did that, and it wouldn't be normally me, but I watched so much over the last 4 days. Like, I watched Borat, I watched On the Rocks with Bill Murray, great, Sophie Coppola's new movie. I watched The Game Night, I think it's 2 years old, but it's landed on Netflix. I watched a bit of Emily in Paris, and I watched Roald Dahl's Witches last night, which landed somewhere, and it'll cost you a fortune just to rent. Ridiculous. I think somebody should take these streaming services to task, because they know they have a captive audience, and they know if Roald Dahl's Witches lands that every child in the country wants to see it. And then you go on, and guess how much it is to rent? $17.99 to rent the feckin' thing. Huh? How can they get away with that? And I was stupid enough to pay it. $17.99 just to rent it. Like, if you were buying it and you could watch it over and over again, fair enough. But to rent it, $17.99. There you go. Anyway, that's that. And information just on Halloween. Like, there's trick-or-treat thing that RTÉ are doing with Tesco. I'll tell you about that, and you can win a trip to Orlando, Florida. That's good news. And what are you going to be doing now that you can't go trick-or-treating? Like, will you resurrect all those old traditions? We used to hang an apple from a string and try and take a bite out of it without using your hands. That's that was the 70s in Kildare. There wasn't much going on. And then Dave, who grew up in Wexford, he was saying we used to put a grape on a mountain of flour or a hill of flour and try and get it. We didn't have grapes back then in Kildare. No, grapes didn't exist. And then he was talking about dead man's brains or something like that, where you put your hand into it. We just had an apple on a string, and all nine of us tried to take a bite out of it. And then if we were really lucky, we might have got the barn brack and the ring and the pea and all that sort of thing. So how are you going to entertain the children? Let us know. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Joan Wexford has been on to that text number. He says, a handy way to sort out that tricky word particularly is to use especially instead. Yeah, I remember struggling with THs once. I had to say the 13th century. I was struggling, and then I just went the 1400s. That sorted that out very quickly. Pre-ordered my book, Dying to Get It in the Post, says Noreen. I think you're going to enjoy it. Ray, two words I always stumble over are statistics and specific. That's John, another John. No, that's John in Wexford, a different person, beginning with J in Wexford. Yeah, a lot of people say Pacific, don't they? As in the ocean, as opposed to specific. I know it's late notice, but could you please play an Ed Sheeran song for my niece, Murren? Mimsy, we call her. Murren Casey, who's spending her 12th birthday in Crumlin Hospital today. Many thanks. It is a bit late, Nuala, but I'll try and fit it in before the end of the show. But anyway, she knows you're thinking of her, and we are thinking of her as well. Mimsy Casey, happy birthday over in Crumlin Hospital. And your auntie, Noonie, or Nuala, and everybody who loves you is thinking of you today. Have a brilliant birthday. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good. I nearly forgot it. It's, you know, 4 days off and you forget everything. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Our quiz of today continues. You know the deal. Today is the 28th of October. Fast approaching November. And we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years, over the centuries, over the decades. And we need two people to answer 5 questions each after 4 o'clock. Great prize this week comes courtesy of our friends at Farnham Estate in Cavan. I love the way to say that, our friends. You and your guests can enjoy a two-night stay in a stylish guest room with breakfast each morning and dinner for two in Maxwell's Grill Room. And I don't know if you know this, but Farnham Estate is located in the heart of magnificent estate with 1,300 acres of mature woodlands and lakes to explore less than 90 minutes from Dublin. Farnham Estate Spa and Golf Resort is a contemporary and stylish hotel full of country charm and character. For more, you can find out all the details, farnhamestate.ie. So two people to come on and battle it out in our quiz of today to get their hands on that lovely prize. But first, you must answer a qualifying question, which is this. Can you name the smallest county in Ireland? It's known as the Wee County. Smallest county in Ireland, and the number to ring, 1850 715 900. 1850 715 900. We need to know the smallest county in Ireland, and good luck with that. Sister Sledge, and we are family. Eve has been on, definitely watching more TV this week than the whole 9 months previously. Just Add Magic is good for children on Amazon Prime. Saw the trailer for Witches and All Set for Halloween Night, then saw the costs. Suppose same as cinema cost, just without the cinema. Yeah, well, I don't know about your telly, but my telly is considerably smaller than the cinema screen. And the sofa isn't quite as big and comfortable as the ones you have in the cinema. Cheaper popcorn in this establishment. Yeah, but that's the advantage, isn't it? While I'm on to you, can you say thanks to my brilliant parents, Eileen and Pat McMorrow, for all their help with their grandchildren in September and October. It was a difficult time for us. Thanks, Eve. Oh, that's great. That's nice to say thanks to Eileen and Pat for helping you out. Now, I mentioned this, so I better give you the details of it. So RT, all the RT stations, RT Radio 1, 2 FM, Radio Na Gaeltachta, Lyric FM, have gone into bed with Tesco to try and make the most out of this Halloween with their Trick Our Street campaign. So you can get together with your neighbours and a chance to experience Halloween magic together. Everything from hampers filled with Halloween goodies. And there's a big prize as well, which I'll tell you about in a moment. But to be involved, text the word Halloween, followed by your name and address to 51551. So it's text the word Halloween, followed by your name and address to 51551, or 80889 from Northern Ireland. 80889 from Northern Ireland. And this is from Tuesday yesterday to Thursday 29th. And then it all happens big time on Friday. We could be calling you and giving you a prize. And the overall winner of the trip to Orlando, Florida for two adults and two children will be revealed on the Late Late Show next Friday. So tune in to one of your favourite stations, RT Radio 1, 2 FM, Radio Na Gaeltachta and Lyric FM, for more information. And there's a big ad going out across as well. So it's Halloween, followed by your name and address to 51551. And thanks to RT and Tesco, you're in line to win something for yourself and everybody in the, on your street. Which is very exciting, isn't it? Very exciting. Now, quick commercial break, yes.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 515 on RT.ie. Now, as I said, tomorrow's the official launch of A Page My Life. And a minimum of €3 from the sale of every copy of the book would be going to Laura Lynn. So we decided we'd get Jane McKenna on the line just to remind ourselves about the great work that Laura Lynn do. Good afternoon, Jane.
Hi, Ray. Lovely to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you. You wrote a lovely piece for the book about the opening of Laura Lynn back in September 2011.
Yeah.
Well, what do you remember about the day?
Well, I suppose I remember everything, really. It was just, it was amazing. I suppose it was, we were just fascinated to have got to that point, you know, after all the years of the hard work that went into trying to get there to build Laura Lynn House. And I suppose it was exciting. And as I said, I think in the piece, I was a little bit nervous as well, with President McAleese being there, of course.
Yeah.
And known, I had to say my own few words. I'm always a little bit nervous, as I am now too. But you know, it was a bit daunting, and all of that, and the amount of people that were there, of course. But it was beautiful, and the day was, gosh, it was amazing. The sunshine, and we kind of put that down to the girls and a few others.
Yeah,
and helped us out of that.
And you headed a legacy of choice and kindness, and the choice refers to the fact that you want to give families who have very sick children a choice as to how they spend their last days and weeks and months.
Yeah, really, I suppose, I think I said it in my own book, when I started out on the research, it was really, you know, looking at the end, because I think a lot of people would know that Lynn's kind of one of her greatest and last wishes was to die here peacefully at home and not in Our Lady's Hospital where she went through her treatment. She loved them, and we were very grateful for everything they did for both her girls, as I think we've often said. But, you know, I suppose we'd all agree that home or hospice, you know, if not hospital, if possible, if when you're dying. And that was her own wish. And, you know, we prayed and hoped she'd get it. And she did, thankfully. She died here and very peacefully after a lovely couple of weeks, an amazing couple of weeks up to her death. But I suppose when I sat on the road then, it was really her that put me on that road, because I thought about that. There was no hospice for children. I didn't know. I wasn't sure, but obviously there wasn't. And I did the research, literally England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. I kind of went to see quite a few hospices. And I suppose what I saw then was it was about life. It was about, you know, children with very complicated illnesses and, you know, all of that, the children that go to Laura Lynn, and just how much it meant to the families, the respite, the care, you know, everything about it. It, you know, it wasn't about the death, but there was that choice at the end.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was amazed myself that I didn't think of that. I was more thinking of the end. But really, when I saw how amazing the whole thing was, that I was more determined than ever, you know, that we should have one.
And you say of Lynn in the piece, at 15, knowing she was dying, she lived every moment and left us the most precious memories and encouragement, not just to carry on, but to live.
Yeah, exactly. She really did live those last, she got almost 3 weeks. Now, she knew it was always the way with Lynn. She wanted to know, and her consultant, Ingsel Markey, was wonderful. He, you know, she had a good relationship with him, but she wanted everything to be straight. She was able to do that. It's not every child or every young person that can or would want to, but she did.
Yeah.
So she knew that she was dying. She didn't know how long, was one of the questions she asked Ingsel, how long have I got? And he couldn't say, really. But, you know, we knew it wouldn't be that long, and she knew that. And she just was determined. And we had a wonderful time, and people were amazing in what they did for us. Those memories are just, you know, they really are. When I'm down, or when you really get down, or when, you know, the bad days come, you think of those, and they actually lift you. She really lived every minute, literally, for 2 weeks. And then she still, you know, she still, even that last week, she, you know, she organised her funeral. She did all of the things that you could never imagine. I mean, I still don't know how she had the strength at 15, but she did, and she was amazing.
Yeah. And when you were chatting to her and she knew she was dying, did you talk about her legacy? Did you talk about keeping her memory alive?
We didn't really.
No.
The one thing she talked about, and she probably talked more to Kieran, who was the priest, who was a kind of a friend of ours as well. She asked for him. Now, Lynn wouldn't have been particularly religious at all, but she wanted Kieran. She liked Kieran. He would be a little bit different to the norm. And, you know, she asked for him to come over a few times, and without breaking any kind of, you know, secrets or anything, he did say that her one concern was that we would live. And that was the one thing she said to us. The day she was told she was going to die, we came home here, and I said, I wish I could take your place. And I, of course, I meant that, but I knew I couldn't. And she just said, it's okay, Mum. You and Dad need to get on with life.
Yeah.
And that was her main concern.
And the achievement of you and Brendan, and how much did you have to raise to open Laura Lynn?
Well, I suppose in my early years before we merged with Children's Sunshine Home, I raised amazingly. And I mean, that was with the help of thousands of people and friends and everybody. Probably about 4.5 million or close to 5. And I mean, I was amazed by that. I got one donation of almost 1 million, and that again came through Lynn in a strange way, but it's a long story.
Right.
But so I think, I can't remember the exact.
So you say it came through Lynn, as in?
Almost 1 million, yeah.
Right.
It was through one of the doctors in the hospital.
Right,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was just one of those things. It was a legacy that somebody had left behind, and it was given. I remember the cheque coming in, right? The cheque came in the door, because at that time I was still kind of working on my own. I think we had started the connection with Children's Sunshine Home. And this cheque came in the door. Actually, it was way back. It was even earlier. I don't think we had the connection. And I had raised about 500,000, and I got the call from this his doctor, if he's listening, he'll know who he is. And he just said, you know, I've been following kind of what you're set up to do. And he said, do you mind me asking him what you've raised? And I think it was near $500,000 at that stage. And he said, well, I there's something that I think I'll be able to help with, which is a lot more than that. And I just couldn't believe it. And when the check came in, it was just a little under $1 million. I'll never forget right. It. It was amazing.
That's into the letterbox, and you open an envelope.
Into
and then,
my letterbox, yeah. Right. So, I mean, that was just fascinating. So that added, obviously, to you know, yes. Make a big thing. But it was, and that was, as I say, in a kind of way, truly, and because this particular doctor, he was young, and he was still in his, you know, his years of training. And I remember saying to Lynn at one stage, gosh, if I was only 10 years younger, and she said, yes, and another 20 with that. Quite annoyed. And I think she was thinking, if I was only a few years older, mind you, she wasn't that much younger than him. He had said it to me. I've spoken to him since. And actually, I was in touch with him. We were to meet just when this COVID started. He's back here in Ireland. Right. But he said to me, there's a photograph of him and Lynn that we have downstairs. And I had sent him a copy of it when he was in the States. And he said, when I look at that photo, how did anybody take me seriously as a doctor? Because, I mean, he doesn't look much older than her. Yeah. So it was wonderful.
And of course, what people forget is, you know, the bricks and mortar is only the start of something like this. Yeah. It's keeping it open is the big challenge, isn't it?
Yes,
because you have to return to the trough over and over again to fundraise with the same people often, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of people, yes, who have been with us from the start and still with us. And then the amazing amount of people that, you know, have come on board and are there and just fantastic. We couldn't do it without them.
And the respite that families get at Laurel Inn is just amazing. Because just to remind people, there's accommodation up there. There's all the facilities of, you know, a top class hospital, but it doesn't feel like a hospital in any way, shape, or form.
No,
there's sort of there's joy there. Which,
yeah, exactly. It's home from home, and you know, there's 8 children's rooms. You can't. I remember people saying way back, you know, could you not have more than 8? Say, but then it becomes you kind of lose that home from home. That's why it can't be too big either. Yeah. But the sitting room, the whole thing, you know, it's very, very much like their own home, and it is their other home from home. Mm. You know, and you've been there, so you know it's just lovely. It's a lovely atmosphere.
It's amazing in all the emails we got from the 150 contributors to the book, they all are so chuffed and delighted that the book is benefiting Laurel Inn. It's a cause that touches everybody. People with children, people without children, old people, young people.
People are amazing. Yeah, they're very kind, and yeah, there is a huge kindness there, and we're delighted. And thanks so much to those people. Yeah. I've gotten the book, and I've read. I haven't read all the stories, obviously, yet, but I've read quite a few, and two I actually know connections to them. It's a really small world again,
right? Yeah. And it's when we were talking to the four judges at the start, and they were giving people pointers, and they mentioned detail. Detail's always very good, and there's lovely detail in your piece because. Yourself, the president at the time, Mary McAleese, and Miriam O'Callaghan all arrived to the opening of Laurel Inn in red.
Yeah,
and it wasn't planned.
No, and somebody told me that red is, well, I didn't even know. Maybe they did, I don't know. But, you know, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's colour women wear it to, well, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a strong colour or something.
Right.
You know, that wasn't. Somebody actually gave me a gift of what I was wearing. So, but no, it wasn't planned, but it was strange, yeah.
All in red. Yeah, and some people were probably remarking, isn't it a great way they planned it now, the three of them there in red?
Probably, yeah. And it wasn't that at all. But no, it was a lovely day, and I have to say, Mary McAleese was lovely. She had, had a kind of a connection again through that priest, Kieran Dunn, because obviously she was the president, and we live just up here in Blanchestown, and I think they went to Mass in different areas, and it was kind of our turn, so Kieran had a connection with her, Kieran Dunn, the priest, and I remember him saying to me when Lynn was in Lynn's last week, he said, you might have a visit from the president, and I said, what? And I was thinking of the house and everything. She can't get in here. But anyway, we didn't have the visit, but she sent a beautiful flower, a beautiful Easter flower, because it was around Easter when Lynn died, and a beautiful card. I still have the card, and the card, the words on the card, a handwritten card, and it was absolutely just wonderful to receive. And Lynn, you know, can imagine how much that meant to Lynn.
Yeah, wonderful. Isn't that very Irish of you? The first thing you thought of was, oh, we can't let her into this house.
This little house.
Brendan, we'll have to redo the whole thing.
To get the house revamped.
Yeah, get Dermot Bannon on the phone there. How is Brendan?
Yeah, he's good. He's good. He's gone off for a walk. You know him and these things. He stays very much in the background of everything. Yeah. But he's fine. I suppose, like that, he's retired nearly 3 years now. And, you know, and even myself, because I've pulled back, as you know, somewhat. It's just life isn't, nothing has changed that much for us other than for me more so even, you know, the going out. I miss the theatre and the cinemas and the going out to friends. And, you know, he does to a degree, obviously, as well. But otherwise, I mean, we really do count ourselves lucky in a lot of ways, you know, because there are so many in such a bad place, I've no doubt.
Yeah. And would Laura be 25 this year?
Laura would have been 25 in January, and Lynn would be 34. She would have been 34 in March. So it's hard to believe it's all those years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say it's different as the years go on, but, you know, the loss is still the same. It's just that awful pain in the early stages eases. That you can only talk for yourself, really, because everyone's different, but it has for me. But there are times, and I suppose, the birthdays, the anniversaries, and because there's two of everything for us to do, there are the times, and it's often the week coming up to it, not the date itself, maybe, or it's hard to explain. Yes. I mean, I just wonder all the time, you know, any time, especially at those occasions, you think, what might have been? Yeah. You know, and I see friends of Lynn, friends that have children and grandchildren. We'll never have that. We might never have had it anyway, but we'll never know, you know. So there is, And but anybody who's lost a child, that's the way it is.
But what an amazing legacy. And I know I say this to you every time, but, it's worth repeating that Laura Lynn and the services they've provided to families over the last 9 years, and will continue to provide, depending on the generosity of people, of course, into the future. It's just an amazing legacy for Laura and Lynn.
Well, I'm just so glad it's there for everybody because, as you know, I know some of the families more, the past families who I keep in touch with, and I don't know all the families there. I know of them, and I know one in particular I was only talking to today, and, you know, I know what it means to them, and I'm so glad that, you know, they have some support, because I often said, while our girls, you know, we had a little bit of 24-hour care, but, they had a life in between. Laura had a couple of good years, and Lynn had 13 years of good health, and even then they still had, you know, good days, and we're very grateful for that, you know. But when I see, and I have seen, the 24-hour care, it is so tough. So just to have any support around that, and I think it means so much, you know. So that in turn gives me a huge lift. I'm delighted for them, and I just want families to know that we think about them all the time. Everybody in Laura Lynn does, obviously, but myself and Brendan in particular, and especially in these times, it's very difficult.
Aisling and Jack McNiff have been on to us there. We are also indebted to the McKenna family. My son Jack attends Hazel House in Laura Lynn for a respite. It's a home away from home. He loves going in. And he's off there tomorrow for 2 nights. For 6 months of lockdown, we couldn't go, but since September, he has been able to attend again. The sport means the world to our family. Thank you, Jane and Brendan. Laura and Lynn left a wonderful legacy. And then Sarah Gibson has been on. Can you thank Jane McKenna for speaking on your show today? I always start crying when I talk to you, Jane. I'm sorry. On behalf of Martin Gibson O'Gara and all the children that go to Laura Lynn Children's Hospice, we're so grateful to Jane for setting up Laura Lynn and her endless dedication to Laura Lynn Children's Hospice. It's like a second home to Martin and all the children that go there. We can never thank Jane enough, and everyone at Laura Lynn, and the kindness of Irish people and the volunteers too. That's Sarah Gibson. And we donate a little to Laura Lynn from time to time. Our daughter Sarah died at age 3 from cancer in 1998. The end was tough. What we wouldn't have given for this wonderful service. Well done. That's Anna and Brian and Leash. And Laura Lynn has changed the life of my nephew, Evan Swain, and his family. He absolutely loves going there. Thanks to everyone there. That's Catherine Carty. So there you go.
Thank you so much, Evan. Yeah, well, thanks. Okay. Thanks.
Well, will you send our best wishes to Brendan, and mind yourself. And
I will. And Ray, just before I go, could I just say a few little things?
Yeah, of course.
It'll only take about a minute.
Yeah, okay.
I just want to say huge thanks again to all our supporters, you know, big or small or whatever. Like, it wouldn't be there without them, and it wouldn't remain without them. So thank you. And, you know, I never mention specifics because we'd be here for about a month or more, probably 6 months. And just want to say thanks and remembering the staff as well. They're all working, as you know, doing their best in whatever way they can do it now. So they're so good, especially the ones working with the precious little ones. And I have to give a shout out to the fundraising team again. You know, so they're wonderful, and they're, you know, it's a tough job now trying to work around stuff, but they've been wonderful and amazing. And just as I said, remembering the families. And I just want to say the thanks, of course, to HarperCollins and all of the people there, and the story writers, as I said. And finally, and last but not least, yourself and Jenny for being true friends to Laura Lynn, more so than anything else. But you're a great ambassador as well, Ray, and thank you so much. And support is wonderful. You've done a lot. And your colleagues, some of your colleagues in RTE, I just want to say thanks for that too, because it means the world, and we couldn't do it. And I know all the charities are, you know, in a bad way.
Yeah.
But, and I hope that
it's a tough time. It's a tough time. Yeah. Okay.
So thank you so much for the future in particular. You know, I think it's the future and the unknown for us all in everything.
Yeah.
You know, but we hope we'll. I'm sure we will keep going because people are wonderful.
I'm sure it will. Well, if it's anything to do with you and Brendan, it'll keep going anyway. Thanks, Jane. Mind yourself. Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I'm fine. And you have to say it like that because there's an exclamation mark at the end of it. Thoughts on Life, Addiction, Love and Health. It's a new book by Enda O'Doherty, who's in our Waterford studio. How are you doing, Enda?
I'm in bits, Ray. I swear to God. Could you not have had someone on talk about global warming before me? And I'm as bad as you. I grew up, my parents made me watch Little House on the Prairie every Sunday, and it turned me into an awful
you're
softie.
You're a crier.
Last piece was incredible. What an amazing woman.
I think when you have children of your own, not that anybody who doesn't have children is incapable of crying, but it makes things like that, stories like that, hit
inspirational
home.
Inspirational woman. Yeah, inspirational.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's a word that's been used to describe you, Enda O'Doherty. So where do we start? we won't start at the top of Kilimanjaro with a washing machine on your back. We start in Dunlavin playing badminton.
You really have done your research.
Yeah. Well, I read the book. That's what you do, you see.
I know. Ray. You know, one of your researchers was talking to me and she asked me five or six different questions. And I kept thinking to myself, how does she know all this? Because this is my first book and this is a brand new experience to me. But yeah, back in Dunlavin, my parents moved there in 1972. We moved from Mullingar. And so my sister, all these names will be well known to you. My sister would have gone to the Cross and Passion. I went to Killashee and then on to Newbridge College, and there were great days, and then finally on to Maynooth. And I suppose that led me in 1990 down to Waterford. My mother put a suit out in the bed, Ray, and she said, do you like that? And I said, yeah. She said, that's the last thing I'm buying you, because I was off for my first job teaching in Waterford, and down I've been since 1990.
Right. I was interested with badminton because it was a family of Peard. Is that how you pronounce it?
That's right, yeah.
Because I'd never heard that name before, and that was the reason that Dunlavin they were the reason that Dunlavin was a hotbed of badminton talent.
That's right, yeah. We had county players and national players and Leinster players. And
who were the Peards?
So Mark Peard, his grandfather, Mr. Peard, we'd always call him Mr. Peard, he was a world champion in badminton and had played in the All England Badminton Championships and ended up living in Ireland and ended up coaching us. And it's one of those bizarre things. We couldn't play hurling, we couldn't play football, but the entire village was obsessed with badminton, yeah.
Right, okay. So you played a bit of rugby, as I like to say, played a bit of rugby for Newbridge, but did you break a vertebrae? Was that what ended your rugby career?
Yeah, so I got a bit of a wallop in the back, and I remember a referee came over to me and said, Enda, you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. And he said, stand up. And I said, yeah, I will. And I couldn't feel anything, couldn't feel my legs. I got a right wallop out, and it's just a way of your body protecting you. So my body switched off and stopped me feeling any more pain for the minute. So I made an early retirement, probably just as well, Ray, given my obsessive tendencies in life. I probably would have gone too far playing it, as in most things in my life.
Yeah, that's a recurring theme, isn't it? obsessive behaviour and addiction.
Yeah, like I'm an alcoholic, which, you know, in Ireland doesn't make you any way unique. It's 12 years, thank God, now since I've had any alcohol. But, you know, part of my journey in this book is that I learned that, you know, sometimes our darkest secrets, our demons, our most difficult times, just like Jane there, you know, can turn out to be our greatest achievements, if you like, or our greatest strengths. Yeah. I'm kinder to me now. You know, I am still the same obsessive person. Like I talk too much, I dance too much, I sing too much, I laugh too much, I eat too much, I exercise too much. But the things that I do now too much are things to help me, my family, or me and my career, or, yeah, you know, people I care about. And it's the same person, you know.
When did you have your first drink?
God, no one has ever asked me that, Ray. I had my first drink, you're going to really laugh now, Nijinsky's. Can you remember Nijinsky's?
I was DJ there for...
Yes,
like,
I probably was those people that shouted at you and you nodded, yeah, I'll play that, and went away again.
Play Summer of 69 there. No, yeah, I won't.
Well, it would have been Come On Eileen. Bad. Yeah, so that was my first drink. I suppose, look, it was... For me, you know, sometimes people say, you know, when did you become an alcoholic? I think, you know, going back through my family, definitely, you know, it was in our genes. But I think my natural personality type meant that I would, you know, naturally fall into something that could be addictive, you know, and I didn't see it coming. You know, it's a bit like a fog. It sort of slips in, you know, all of a sudden I was drinking, I suppose, by adulthood at my worst or best, however you want to phrase it. I was drinking about 4 bottles of whiskey a week. My Friday night drink would have been a pint glass of vodka. And after a while, I used to drink Benlin with that because... If incredible. Oi. Well, a pint glass of vodka was like you having 2 glasses of wine. I was relaxed, you know, I wasn't particularly drunk, and it was going to kill me, you know.
You, from reading the book, you were high functioning in that you were holding down a job as a secondary school teacher.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like a lot of people with substance abuse or addiction, I was suited, booted, first in, last out, smile on my face. I was, you know, wasn't running around the streets breaking things or letting people down. But I describe what was happening in my life to people as slow motion suicide. You know, I had that pint glass of orange, say, at a social function, but it was really full of gin. You know, if there was a staff outing, I would be there an hour before everyone else to make sure I had my 3 or 4 drinks, strong ones, on my own, you know.
Yeah. And you discovered loads of empty wine bottles in a shed recently, did you?
Yeah, yeah. So the book was finished and the publishers were all delighted and, you know, it's a huge amount of work. And then I rang the good Jerry Kelly in Red Stripe Print and I said, Jerry, we need to put another chapter in. He said, no, we can't do that, you know. And I said, well, look, we were like a lot of people during lockdown. Our garden was turned into a snooker table. It was that manicured by the end of it. But we moved the shed, or we're cleaning out around the garden shed, and I found a whole pile of bottles where what I was doing was, you know, like a lot of couples, you know, we had our wine in the garden shed that we brought back from France. But when my wife would send me out to the shed, Ray, and she said, go and get a bottle of Chianti, I went out and I would nearly always drink the entire bottle in 30 seconds and then bring in the real bottle of
it. So you'd neck it?
In like a shot. Yeah, like a shot. And then I suppose the deception then is that I would probably say, I'll have one large glass, and she'd say, will you have another glass? And I said, you know, I'm okay tonight. But I was already after having the entire bottle, you know. Yeah. But when we moved the shed, I found them. And to be honest, it's a different Enda. You know, I know in the book I write a bit about Enda 2.0. You know, I sort of looked at the shed and these bottles and I thought, what the hell? Like, how did I go from sitting in the shed doing that to working as a motivational speaker, an author? You know,
we'll come to how you gave up the drink in a moment, but I'm sort of, you know, our relationship as a nation with alcohol is dysfunctional. And do you see that more clearly now? That you're a non-drinking alcoholic.
Yeah, I'm a great fella to have at a party because I'm still as loud, I'll sing as much, and I'm as much crack, and I'm a great man to pour a drink, because just because I can't drink doesn't mean nobody else can, you know. But I would definitely see that, you know, like, you know, the baby's born, we wet the baby's head, the baby's 18, we buy them the first legal pint, the baby's 21, we'll celebrate, we win the county final, we'll fill the cup, we lose the county final, feck it, we'll go and have a few drinks, you know. Somebody, you know, the kids have the first communion, we put the tent up, the bottles of Prosecco, confirmation, we'll do it again. I got caught up in that. You know, that wasn't just the only time I drank. Any excuse, everything was connected to alcohol, you know.
Yeah. And do you think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like in America now, they're re-looking at the whole labelling of somebody being an alcoholic, because they reckon that it lets people off the hook. It's like you're either an alcoholic or you're not. Whereas a large majority of people have a problem with drink.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's for me, addiction is about honesty. Like, I lied to everyone around me, and I particularly lied most of all to myself. You know, I didn't realise, you know, the damage that I would have done to my health long term if I'd kept going with that volume of alcohol. The waste of life, you know. I often tell people, you know, the average person listened to your radio show today, and I don't want to depress anyone, but the average person is going to live 28,000 days.
Right.
And it's really important that you fill those days, you know, whether it's helping a children's hospice, whether it's being kind to people, whether it's doing the best you can at your work, whatever you are, having the best relationships with your family or friends, being as healthy as you can. We need to squeeze the life out of every one of those days. And I think the sad thing about addiction is that you lose that potential.
You lose an awful lot of days,
yeah,
don't you?
You do, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And it's about, you know, I think right now, you know, it was interesting when you talk about the shed there and we wrote the chapter on COVID. I think a lot of people for the first time in their life might be experiencing anxiety and stress and not realising what it is. And the first few days of COVID, I certainly felt, you know, return to the dark, bad days. But very quickly, I realised what was happening to my mental health. And very quickly, I was able to take actions and do things to put myself back on track, you know.
So you gave up the alcohol in a cold turkey fashion.
Yeah, like a lot of things, really. I didn't do it the logical, safe way. So I played a tennis match one night in Waterford's fantastic tennis club, St. Anne's, and came home wired with adrenaline after playing a match late under lights, and poured myself a brandy and milk, which was my favourite drink. I read one stage Brendan Behan loved brandy and milk, and I said, right, if it was good enough for him, it's good enough for me. And I woke up the next morning and I simply said to my wife, you know, between the adrenaline from the sport and the brandy, you know, that bad night's sleep where you're asleep but you're not rested, and I said to my wife the next morning, I said, that's it, I'm done.
But was there not a sort of a road to Damascus epiphany? Was there not you at your lowest moment?
No, do you know, I think sometimes people often talk about hitting rock bottom. You know, as funny as it is, my moment of my Damascus moment, as you put it, was I said to my wife, I'm giving up. I'm going to stop. I'm going to change my life. And she said, that's great, love. And any married man listening to this knows there's a particular tone of voice that girlfriends and wives use. And if you saw the script, it said, that's great, love. But the reality was she didn't believe it. And I suppose it mirrors what the book is about in terms of resilience and overcoming difficulties, because, you know, the mental and physical challenges that I went through in sobriety to inspire people and to help people all evolved around the fact that someone said, Enda, do you know what? You can't do that. There's no way you can walk from Belfast to Waterford with a washing machine on your back.
And you definitely won't climb Kilimanjaro.
You definitely won't.
They were sort of half right there. No.
three quarters. Right.
Right. But I suppose that let's then tease out where the relationship with Pieta House came, because after you gave up the drink, that's when I suppose you'd been self-medicating.
Yeah, like a lot of people, you know, a lot of people, I was unaware that I had anxiety disorder, I had depression, I had sleep disorder, I had panic attacks, and I was medicating, you know, with alcohol. When I stopped, I did cold turkey, and I suppose initially I survived is the only way to describe it, because for 4 or 5 months I didn't sleep. I mean, you know, I often tell people, I can remember sitting in our bathroom watching sunrise and being delighted that the sun came up, because that's when the demons would end. That's when I could put on the clothes and go into work and pretend to be normal. And I suppose I promised myself that I would get as strong and as healthy and as fit and appreciate what I had in life. And I also promised myself, and I would have said it to my family, that I knew what hell looked like. I knew what dark clouds felt like to be walking around in them. And I promised myself that if I got free, that I would save or help someone else come from, you know, that darkness. That was what I wanted to do.
Yeah. And you read the statistics that 10 people take their lives to suicide every week in Ireland. And you saw Pieta House and Joan Freeman and how inspirational she was, and you decided to help them. And how did the washing machine thing happen? Did you look around at all the white goods and you decided which is the heaviest or which is the most awkward, or what was it?
Well, it's something like that. You know, the thing is, you know, you were talking there a few moments ago about fundraising. It's very hard to raise funds in Ireland, and you do need a hook. You need something that people will pay attention to, or, you know, that media in particular will grab hold of. So the media hook was the washing machine, and it definitely works. So look, I've been on your TV show, and here we are talking now, and there's a book, but I suppose the story with the book came about, about the washing machine came about because, you know, I said to my wife, you know, I'm going to walk from
Maeve,
Belfast.
We give
Maeve.
Her a name.
Yes, yeah. Lovely
and,
Maeve.
And you write so lovingly about Maeve in the book. It's a beautiful thing, and you've set the bar very high for the rest of us, I can tell.
No, not at all, not at all. I tell you, Ray, she's everything that I would love to be. She is the right. She's the most gentle, caring, quiet person. You know somebody who, you know, if she has something bad to say or negative to say, she doesn't. And if she doesn't raise her voice. She's calm. She's just lovely.
And you proposed to her within what, a week of meeting her?
Yeah, I met her in Maynooth on a Monday, and she was in first year in college, and I met her and I asked her to marry me over a creamy bun in the Elite Cafe in Maynooth on the Wednesday, 2 days later, and her exact words were, go home to your mammy and grow up, because I was only 19 and I didn't have the bus fare, never mind anything else. But I said to her I was going to carry a washing machine from Belfast to Waterford. She said...
this is years after you proposed for now.
This is years afterwards, yeah. This is before the charity escapades. And she said, initially I said I'm going to walk from Belfast to Waterford and raise funds and get people talking about mental health and get men particularly to talk about suicide and to talk about, you know, depression. And my wife's exact answer was, is that all? And I said, well, in that case, I'll carry a washing machine. And she said, go on. And I said, I will. And 9 months later, I walked out of the Europa Hotel with a washing machine strapped to my back to do 9 marathons in 8 days to walk from Belfast to Waterford with my washing machine.
And you did it. It was painful and you fainted and you puked and you did all sorts of things.
Yeah, but
you
sure,
got
look,
there.
Listen, about day 2, the main road turned into a snake because I was hallucinating. I hope nobody's sitting down to their dinner now or their afternoon tea, but I lost all of my toenails, my fat pads, my feet. I broke both feet. I had what only can be described as combustible diarrhea, but I got through. I kept going because, you know, the message with the washing machine, Ray, and the message throughout the
share
book
the
was
load.
Share the load, ask for help. You know, I was clearly carrying something. You know, I picked up a washing machine because it was the most stupid load I could carry around. You know, as you look around the studio there, look into the production area there in front of you, like, somebody will smile and be getting on with their job and you can't see the load they're carrying. Yeah. And some people are carrying such a significant load. As you say, like 10 of those people will lose their lives to suicide this week. And the first thing you know is when you hear, God, did you hear the terrible story or the terrible news about somebody? Yeah. And you're shocked because you didn't know they were carrying that load. So my simple message with the book was, you know, don't carry something stupid around. If you're in crisis, if you're in trouble, you know, real masculinity, real strength, you know, is ask for help, put that load down and ask for someone, you know, ask someone to, I suppose the second part is to ask people if they're carrying a load, because we can't always see it, you know, it's the perfect, someone described to me yesterday, it's the perfect book cover for radio because the title is I'm Fine and you can visualize it, as you said, I'm screaming in the
You're
picture.
You're screaming, yeah.
And, you know, what I really wanted people to think about was, you know, at the times when I was at my worst, I told everyone, yeah, I'm good, how are you? I'm fine. And how's the kids? And, you know, I totally buried that I was in real, real trouble and I wanted to write about it, you know.
Now, we've a lot more to talk about, but we've very little time. So I'll skip on to up Kilimanjaro with the selfsame washing machine, and your sort of best bit, your moment, is something that Maeve said to you.
Yeah, God, we were talking about it this morning, actually. We went for a walk and she said, what do you tell Ray? And I said, I don't know, it's a very small amount of time to cover 6 years, but... we were on the mountain. I suppose, you know, one thing that struck us was the Africans who we were with had financially nothing, but yet they were completely happy, completely content with their life. Do you know, one of the porters said to me one day, I showed him my hand and I said, God, I said, what's that under my fingernails? You know, something horrible. And he had a look at my hand, Ray, and he said, do you know what that is, Enda? He said, that's adventure. That's life. And it was that kind of wisdom. But, you know, the first time I got off the bus, with a washing machine on my back in Kilimanjaro. Like the Africans had heard about the Irish and how much crack we were and that we were a bit nutty and good crack, you know, and their faces literally like, where is this fella going to climb the tallest freestanding mountain in the world with a washing machine strapped to his back? And they were shocked. But, you know, by 2 days in, I was walking along one day at my washing machine and, you know, I walked past 2 Tanzanians and, they raised their fists in the air and they said, share the load. And I thought, this is magic. But on the final day, you know, like it's a long story and it's a moving
story.
It's all in the book, as the fella says. But we were in the village, we were in the final camp, and the Tanzanians, they wrote a song called Madu Machine Anakoma Simba, which is washing machine man strong like a lion in Swahili. And they were singing this, dancing with tricolours, which we'd given them. The dust is rising. There's literally elephants in the distance. I'm there at my washing machine, and suppose my wife just turned to me and she said, you know, if our kids have 1% of your spirit, I'll be happy. And
that was it. That was it.
Yeah, that's you know, women are fantastic. They can really do so much for us. But I literally didn't speak for a whole day after it. I was just so shocked. But I mean, I was just so privileged. It was just the most amazing, amazing adventure to be part of. And I hope people enjoy reading it, you know.
Yeah, I think they will. I think they will. There's lots in there. Life, addiction, love and health and the washing machine.
Could I just say, Ray, you know, the traditional thing is people say, who's the book dedicated? And sure, I mentioned my family, but this book is dedicated on the front page. I dedicated the book to anyone who's lost family or friends to suicide. I've also dedicated the book to anyone who wanders into a bookshop or anyone listening to this right now and thinks they've no way out. The dark clouds are too dark and, you know, they can't see that sunshine. And I want people to read this book. I want you to be uplifted. I want you to laugh. I want you to cry. But I want people to know, you know, that there's always, always that sunshine.
Endo Doherty, thanks so much. I'm Fine is the book, and it's available in bookshops now and online, I'd imagine, as well. Thanks, Enda.
Thank you so much, Ray. Thanks for having
me
on.
Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gramagat, Marbury, thank you very much. 5 on 5 on RTE.ie. B in Mallow says, off the drink 11 years, still coming across empties. The battle never ends. And you know what Enda writes about in the book, which I didn't get to talk to him about? The fact that every time you go into a shop or somebody's house or whatever now, you're sanitising your hands with an alcohol-based product. And that's a challenge for him. James in Dunmore says, Enda was one of my teachers in De La Salle some years back. He was one of the most straightforward and decent men I ever knew. I have the utmost respect for what he has done for people's mental health awareness over the past few years. And just wondering, what's the name of Enda's book? Thanks, Barry and Athai. It's I'm Fine, in gold print, and it's unmistakable. It's a black cover with Enda's bald head screaming out at you. And Enda O'Doherty is the name. And that man is inspirational. I wouldn't have looked beyond the toaster. You wouldn't get much, you know, attention now if you said you were going to walk from Belfast to Waterford with a toaster on your back, would you? Probably not, no. Yes, it's time for our quiz of today, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. And today is the 28th of October, so we've 10 questions. The news events, the scientific breakthroughs, the TV programmes, the movies, the songs, all of that in the 10 questions. And we have a prize as well. Today's prize comes courtesy of our friends at Farnham Estate and Cabin. You and your guests can enjoy a two-night stay in a stylish guest room with breakfast each morning and dinner for two in Maxwell's Grill Room. More details at farnhamestate.ie. Angela O'Toole is on the line from Clanmellon in County Westmeath. How are you doing, Angela?
I'm great, Ray. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
So you're enjoying the commute from the kitchen to the spare room?
Up the stairs, yes. That's as long as it is.
That's it.
It's great.
Compared to what you were doing, what were you doing before lockdown?
Commuting every morning from Westmeath to UCD in Dublin.
What was that like now?
Well, once I got up early, up at 4:30, quarter to 5 and left at 5:30, it was fine.
Oh, God.
But if I left earlier, it was a nightmare.
Later, yeah, if you left
3
later.
3 hours on the M50, yeah.
Yeah. So, is everybody, all your work colleagues, working from home?
The majority are. Some have to be in, some are home, you know.
Yeah.
Most
yeah.
are home, but some just have to be on campus, you know.
And apart from the commute, how else is it affecting you?
Well, miss the banter with the colleagues and stuff, and miss seeing my family. My son and daughter are based in Dublin, one's in Chicago, but they can't leave Dublin, I can't leave Westmeath, but we're healthy, we're strong, and when you listen to what other people have gone through, just very thankful that everybody's safe and healthy.
Yeah. So all the children have gone?
Yes.
Right. And you've replaced them with?
Empty nest. So I have 2 dogs and 2 cats.
Right. And they get on okay, do they, the cats and the dogs?
We have a Mr. Sherlock and Miss Watson named by my daughter. 2 cats, black cats.
Right.
And we have Bilbo Waggons and Cuddles, yeah.
So right, okay.
They do get on, yeah.
And they cohabit, habitate.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, okay. You're up against James Fitzgerald, who's lives in the airport.
Hi, James.
You're at the back of the airport, James.
Back at the airport, a little place called St. Margaret's there, yeah.
Right.
That's where my dad is from.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Isn't that a mad coincidence?
All my brothers play football for St. Margaret's.
Well, I play for St. Margaret's and my kids play for St. Margaret's.
Well, so the Duns, all the Duns, Walter, Thomas, JJ, Paul.
Thomas Dunn is a friend of mine.
It'd be
Anthony's son.
Oh, yeah, that's my... Just talking to his dad last night, Anthony Dunn. Yeah.
Anthony, yeah, there you go. Small world, isn't it?
You chat away. I'll sit back here.
I am a Dublin native, you know. But St. Margaret's, yeah.
You can hear it in your voice I love Ireland. I love Ireland, so, James, you're a farmer. What do you grow?
We grow all crops, Ray, wheat and barley and oilseed rape, so we do.
Now, and what part of your season are you in now? What are you doing?
We're in the sowing season here at the moment. We're sowing corn here at the moment, just across the road nearly from the new terminal. I can look at it there now and Dublin Airport.
Right. And do you think the flights coming in and going out affects your crops at all?
No, I wouldn't think so. No, you don't see too many flights at the moment.
No, that's true, that's true.
Last year... You get used to them because you live beside the airport. Now you see a plane, you look up to say, oh, geez, there's a plane going by. Rarity now,
Yeah, you get used to the new normal very quickly, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Who's at home with you?
I'm actually at work, so I am, but my wife, Yvonne, and my two little lads, Finn and Jack, are at home there.
And what age are they?
Finn is 7 and Jack is 4.
And will you be carving pumpkins?
Oh, they're painting them this year.
Oh, paint, right, that's a good idea. Less mess around the house, I think.
Yeah, less mess in the whole lot. But it's very hard, we're looking for the bigger pumpkins, very hard to find. A smaller pumpkin this year.
Right, okay. We wish Finn and Jack good luck with the pumpkin painting. Now, 5 questions each. Angela and James, whoever answers most correctly, gets that trip up to the Farnham Estate in Cavan. It's lovely up there. I don't know if you've been there. It's really lovely up there. So it's a nice prize. We need your answers as quickly as possible. If at the end of 5 questions each, we have a draw situation, we go to a tiebreak. Good luck, Angela. Good luck, James. Here we go.
Best luck, Angela.
Thank you. Best luck.
Right, Angela, your first question is this. Okay. On this day in 1492, Christopher Columbus sighted which island and claimed it for Spain? Its modern-day capital is Havana.
Cuba.
Is the correct answer. James, on this day in 1955, Egypt and Saudi Arabia signed a defence treaty. What is the capital city of Egypt?
Cairo.
Is the correct answer. Good start. Angela, your second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
Do you remember me?
No, I'm sorry. I was in here yesterday. You wouldn't wait on me?
Oh, you work on commission, right?
Yes. Big mistake. Big. Huge.
Okay, that's a clip from Pretty Woman. In 1967, the American, one of those actresses was born in Georgia. Can you name her?
Julia Roberts.
Is the correct answer. And for you, James, have a listen to this.
How dare you show your back to me? Slave! Will you remove your helmet and tell me your name?
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius. Commander of the Armies of the North.
Okay, on this day in 1974, actor Joaquin Phoenix, who was in that clip, was born in San Juan, Puerto Rico. That was a clip of him acting alongside Russell Crowe. In which film?
Gladiator.
Is the correct answer. Right. Angela, question number 3 for you. On this day in 1948, the flag of Israel was adopted. What are the two colours on the Israeli...
Blue and white.
Is the correct answer. James, on this day in 1949, Georges Bidault was elected President of France. What are the 3 colours on the flag of France?
Red, white and blue.
It's the correct answer. You're flying to them. Angela, another audio question. Have a listen to this.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass.
Oh, that song was number 1 on this day in 2014. Can you name the singer?
No, I'm trying.
Any idea? No. She was a mentor or a judge on The Voice in the UK. Megan Trainor is her name. Right. And for you, James, an audio one for you.
They say, dance for me, dance for me, dance for me.
So that song was number 1 on this day last year. Can you name the act?
Uh, having a brain.
No, didn't think you would. Didn't think you would. I would have been surprised if you did. Tones and I. Okay. Right, so it's 3-3 on to the final question. Down to the wire, as they say. Angela, here it is. On this day in 1936, US President FDR rededicated the Statue of Liberty on its 50th anniversary. What does the R stand for in FDR?
Roosevelt.
It's correct. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So, James, you're under pressure now. Angela's on 4, you're on 3, but you have a question in hand. If you get it right, we're into a tie-break situation. Get it wrong, and Angela's off to Cavan to Farnham Estate. Here's the question. On this day in 2018, Michael D. Higgins was re-elected as President of Ireland. He was first elected in 2011. Who did he succeed as President of Ireland?
Was it Mary McAleese?
It's a draw. We're into a tie-break situation. Well done to you both. It was the pop music that let you down, but still good answers, 4 out of 5. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. It's the closest to the correct answer that will win. So last question, Angela. I'll need your answer as quick as possible, okay. And then James as quick after that, if you would please. Thank you. Yeah. On this day in 1975, Art Garfunkel was at number one with "I Only Have Eyes for You." According to Spotify, how long in minutes and seconds is that song, Angela?
3 minutes 30 seconds.
You said 3 minutes 30 seconds.
3:31.
Strategic answer. The correct answer is very close to both of your answers. It's 3 minutes and 39 seconds. So James, yeah, you chose correctly in choosing longer. Angela, sorry about that.
No problem. Best of luck, James. Enjoy the trip.
We'll send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Good. I have my coffee in it.
Yes. Okay. Right.
Thanks, Ray.
It was lovely to bring both of you together.
Absolutely.
To St. Margaret's people. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well done, James.
Okay.
See you, Angela. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we got a text in the first hour from Auntie Nuala. And Nuala is Auntie Tomurin, also known as Mimsy Casey, who is spending her 12th birthday in Crumlin Hospital. And she asked us, could we play an Ed Sheeran song to cheer her up on her 12th birthday? And we said we might squeeze it in. Well, here you go. Happy birthday, Mimsy. Sheeran! I see he's worth 400 million or something ridiculous. It's in the paper today. He increased his wealth last year by over 40 million. Very talented man. And that's Galway girl there. And Bioga, of course, who are regulars on our show, backing him there on that one. Now, tomorrow night in the telly, Home Rescue returns for a new season. And with it, return architect Roisin Murphy and builder Peter Finn. How are you doing, Roisin?
Hi, how are you, Ray?
Great. We know each other. Just better say that.
We're from Kildare, the primordial soup.
Yes, yeah. You used to hang around with my sister.
And I still hang around with your sister,
when she's
I'm
home.
Hoping.
Yes,
although
yeah.
She is in New York, it's slightly more difficult to just hang outside the chipper. Yes.
And Peter, famously, Roisin's dad told my sister when she was about 8 or 9 that if he drove in his sock feet, he could save petrol.
I know this story.
I love it. Brilliant.
He still probably would try something like that. He's gone on to. We had to take Instagram off him recently.
Right.
We had to go down and delete the app because he was using it as a remote control. So there were friends going, "Your dad's after sending me the maths message." So we had to go down and take it off him. But
yeah,
I'm sure he's listening today.
You're absolutely explaining an awful lot of my problems there, Ray, in one sentence.
Yeah.
It runs in the family, put it like that.
So Home Rescue, I love Home Rescue because it has a big heart, a huge heart. Not a big budget, but a big heart.
Yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
What limits do you set in yourself, Roisin? How many days are you allowed?
Well, now, okay, to be fair to everybody, and I've always said this, and Peter's the only one who's run to my defence on this, the lads have historically only had about a day and a half on set to build and do everything, okay? So we're very, very careful. It gets very stressful and very difficult. Now, this year, we gave them another half a day, so they got 2 days. And
wow.
Now, because it says when the credits go up, it says you get 3 days, but that's not for the builders. The builders get less than that. And Peter, in fairness, pulls rabbits out of hats and does all sorts of things. But he's the only one. People say, I'm thinking wrong, Roisin. It's actually 3 days they get. And then he goes, no, no, she's right. Yeah. She was there.
You have a lovely on-air relationship, Peter, yourself and Roisin.
Yeah, Roisin likes to call me her arch nemesis these days. But we're more frenemies. And look, two very strong-minded people. Yes. We get on great.
Yeah.
But time pressures mean high tensions. And look, I just do what I'm told, and Roisin just doesn't seem to realise that, you know.
So I'll just give you some quotes from tomorrow night's episode.
Okay.
Yeah. I need Roisin to tell me exactly what she wants.
Did you tell me, Roisin, in the end?
I know. That's committal. I mean, and Peter will tell you, I am very loath to commit. I would go, we might do that. Because I do, I mean, it is a difficult project. And Peter backs me on this, I'd say, even though we slag each other about it. We do set out to get the absolute best finish, which is difficult under 2 days. So it gets very, very difficult. And things turn up like things are in the wrong place when you pull out a cupboard, like water, for instance.
Yes, yes.
Famously, we'll find things that suddenly change the plan. So it gets very difficult, but it doesn't stop me from being a bit exact.
You do a great job. People have to tune in tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Sinead, who's recovering from cancer, and she lives with her daughter, Jodie. And just before we chat generally about what's going on in the building trade and architecture and all that sort of thing, this is Sinead and Jodie's reaction when they walk in and see what you've done, architect Roisin Murphy, builder Peter Finn. This is amazing. And she said, oh my God, and she promised herself she wouldn't say, oh my God.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, yeah, that was lovely. That's tomorrow night's 7 o'clock.
That reaction is what makes our work worthwhile, Ray, because we, you know, when we're in the middle of the trolls of getting the job done, you have to keep reminding yourself that you are, like, it sounds a bit corny, but we definitely do change people's lives with what we get done in such a short period of time. And then when you see it on telly, because I don't get to see it, Roisin does be there, I'm gone home, covered in dust, and then you see that it makes it all worthwhile, and it's brilliant, and Sinead fully deserved it.
And in general, there is a sort of a tension, Peter, between builders and architects, isn't there? Sort
of. Well, I think I've used this phrase on it. I think designers are from Mars and builders are from Venus, or one way to do it. Roisin suddenly learned how to speak Martian as well, so I've nowhere to escape now, you know.
I think he said, tried that line of me, and I said, that's everybody, I'm from Thor, Peter. I'm from Thor, not from Venus. Don't mistake me for Venus. So.
You do share some of your own story, Roisin, saying that you have three teenagers at home.
Yes.
And people are, because of lockdown, are looking at their homes more closely and differently.
Yeah, and I have to say, for me, it changed how I perceived even architecture. I mean, we've been in love with the open plan concept for years and years, and you know, we've been coming home from work and trying to get as much life into our house as short a time as possible, if you know what I mean. And open plan facilitates that. But lockdown, teenagers and your individual space within a house became really important, particularly if you're trying to work from home at the same time. So I kind of think it should change housing in a way, because even in terms of trying to self-isolate in a house and have a second bathroom, like, there's kind of fundamentals we'll have to think about in housing forever, I think, from now on.
So there's a backlash against the open plan.
The new thing, Ray,
yes,
is the broken plan.
Right. It's kind of
a broken open plan. So you can drop that into conversation when you're discussing design.
It doesn't matter if I know what it means or not, just drop it into conversation.
The whole thing now is broken plan, dear. And then they'll go, what? It means basically that you can shut down open plan. You know what I mean? So that you can have, say, particularly this is really important if you have teenagers, that they have a space that they can go to necessarily.
So what sort of concertina type walls, is it?
Yeah, concertina doors, or you might have a drop in level between one room and another, so the living room is at a higher level, or that's sliding doors, or even screen walls, or even, I hate to say it, the big rooms and the big thing that's come back into fashion is dining rooms, which we thought, because they double up as home offices and all those sort of weird things.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And Peter, like, brilliantly, I suppose, for the industry, construction has been allowed to continue under Level 5, which is good news.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like on site? Are you working away?
Yeah, well, thankfully, we have been able to keep going. Like, construction industry was very lucky in that we were one of the last to lock down in the first lockdown, and again, we've been allowed to keep going. But I suppose there's been a huge uplift in terms of the standards in the construction industry in the last 15 to 20 years in particular.
Yeah.
So we're kind of used to tying in with different protocols that come into site, and the Construction Industry Federation were very quick to put protocols in place, and it was up to then everybody individually on site and to, you know, from management level down to put the protocols in place. And we've been able to do it. And thankfully, there's been very few clusters on construction sites.
Great.
A lot of different stuff, especially like if you're working in someone's house privately at home, that type of dynamic has changed completely. Yeah. But the general on site stuff, there's more protocol. But look, we're back to
functioning. And speaking of working in people's homes, I would imagine because people are at home more, they're seeing, you know, the problems that they've probably lived with because they were going out to work every day, and, you know, and then it was dark when they came home, but now they're seeing them in daylight, and they're going to better fix that. So you're in demand, I would imagine.
Yeah, 100%. It's actually quite difficult for me even to get lads from my own industry because everyone's just so busy.
Flat out, yeah.
Yeah, like, people haven't gone on holidays, so they've got a few extra few pounds, and they're willing to spend that on, you know, that little area of the house that was probably needing nothing for a long time. They've been looking at it during lockdown. They said, right, listen, I'm getting it done now.
The downstairs loo in our house.
Yeah.
That's happening. Yeah, every time I go home now, I can't believe you showering that downstairs, Lou. How did you shower in that downstairs? Sorry, Jenny. Okay, right, that's it. I have to say goodbye before I get myself in trouble. Rosie Murphy, Peter Finn, tomorrow night, Home Rescue at 7 o'clock. See you. Talk to you soon.
See
you,
Peter.
Bye. That's it from us. And somebody, Angela, wants to know what the smallest county in Ireland is. I thought everyone knew, that's why I didn't say it. It's Louth. Louth, yes. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.